Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 23rd, 2015. At least 30 people were killed by suspected cattle raiders in Jonglei State.
On our side, we have lost 18 people and 9 people are wounded under critical condition. And the number is still increasing, number of the dead people. Like just 30 minutes ago, I received another report for about 2 people.
And the United Nations commemorates its 70th birthday with a strong message for South Sudanese leaders.
There will also be need to do a lot of work to foster forgiveness, reconciliation and healing. And it will require the involvement and commitment of everybody.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least 30 people were killed when suspected Murle youth attacked cattle camps in a remote village in Jonglei State's Bor County yesterday. Local officials say forces are still pursuing the attackers. The attack is one of the deadliest cattle raids in Jonglei State since conflict broke out in South Sudan in December 2013. For VOA News, Jacob Achek reports from Bor.
Bor County Commissioner Isaac Mameruk says 100 of suspected Murle youths armed with machine gun and rocket propelled garnets attacked the cattle camp in Jalepayam on Tuesday morning.
On our side, we have lost 18 people and 9 people are wounded under critical condition. And the number is still increasing, number of the dead people. Like just 30 minutes ago, I received another report for about 2 people who have found dead bodies. And we have other two youths who are missing, and the SVLA officer who was in charge for SVLA post in Jale area.
Rook says 2 women are among the dead. He says 12 soldiers died in an ambush as they pursued the suspected raiders after the attack. Area MP Kwal Bolayom says the attackers are suspected to have come from Pibor. He says the main attacks focus on cattle camp in Were, about 7 kilometers from Jalepayam headquarters.
The youth who were there released the cattle in the morning for pasture. So the armed youth suspected to be from Murle attacked the cattle camp during the releasing of the cows, and they marched away with a good number of cattle.
Ayom says the raiders stolen an estimate 1,600 cattle from one camp alone. Commissioner Rook says the government has sent 100 of soldiers to the scenes of the attacks to act as a deterrent to any other groups who might be planning a raid. Bor County resident Malina Duot says he is disappointed that South Sudanese communities still cannot live together peacefully, 4 years after the country's gain independence.
As the youth of Bor County, we are totally condemned that. Totally, we are not very happy for that. Because it's not good where the people can kill each other. Meanwhile, we are brothers to each other. We are in one state, even though now His Excellency, the President of the Republic of South Sudan, divided 28 states in the country. We, the South Sudanese people, we suppose not to killing each other, instead to looking for the development.
A spokesman of the Episcopal Church of Sudan, or ECS Diocese in Bor, Philip Malwangding, denounced the attack as criminal.
Actually, we were not very happy about what happened yesterday, about the information that took place in Jale by this Murle, who killed dozens of people and injured a number of people who were just blown to Bor this afternoon.
The cattle raid is the deadliest report in Jonglei State in several years. 6 people were killed and 3 wounded in a cattle raid in Jale in February. That was also blamed on Murle youth from Pibor. Jale villagers did not seek revenge after the attacks, but insist as the national government to deploy community police to the area for protection and reach out to the leaders of the greater Pibor area. Former rebel David Yao to ask him to tell the Murle to engage in dialogue with their neighbors instead of attacking them. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
United Nations agencies in South Sudan today commemorated the 70th anniversary of the World Body. The commemoration ceremonies in Juba highlighted the role of the UN agencies in delivering aid services to thousands of people across the country. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
The UN anthem played as hundreds gathered at the UN compound in Juba to take part in the event. Most were people who work with UN agencies, but a few government officials also turned up. The commemoration included entertainment from an Acholi group of traditional dancers and a performance by Rwandan peacekeepers serving in the country. Margaret Loy, head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says UN workers have airdropped 100,000 metric tons of food since January 2014, provide clean drinking water to hundreds of thousands of people, and continue to protect civilians affected by the conflict. She says the government and the armed opposition should step up their efforts to implement the peace agreement signed in August.
South Sudan's leaders now have a chance to correct their grave mistakes and focus on the well-being of those who entrusted them with a leadership role, namely the people of South Sudan.
Loy says it's time the country's leaders focus on how to get South Sudanese children back in school, how to get farmers more involved in the cultivation of their crops, and how to restore peace in the country.
There will also be need to do a lot of work to foster forgiveness, reconciliation, and healing. And this will require a strong commitment of the leaders, the parties, and the general public. And it will require the involvement and commitment of everybody, the military, civil society, the private sector, faith-based organizations, and non-governmental organizations, as well as the media.
Loy says the UN will continue the UNMISS mandate to protect civilians and monitor human rights abuses in the country. South Sudanese Minister of Education, John Guy, the chief guest at the event, says he recognizes the important role UN agencies have played in the development efforts of South Sudan over the years. As South Sudan struggles to implement the peace deal, Guy says UN agencies and other international partners can help the country by focusing on institutions.
We had the problem of institutional buildings, and those institutional buildings are built by human beings. They don't build themselves. And so the period we wasted for the last 10 years, we should have built, in fact, both the institutions and the human resources that would have built that one. What we opted for was the training, capacity building. When in South Sudan, we didn't need a capacity building in technical terms, but we need to build the human being, the sidekick of the human being.
Since the fighting broke out in late 2013, hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese have fled to UN camps across the country. The theme of this year's event was Strong UN, Better World. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Analysts at a public lecture in Juba yesterday say the strained relationship between UN and the government of South Sudan will further complicate matters during the implementation of the IGAD brokered peace deal. As Philip Thornalew reports for VOA from Juba, they also say the warring parties bear the main responsibility for ensuring that lasting peace is restored in South Sudan.
Zakaria Ding Akol, a senior policy analyst with the Juba-based think tank the Sud Institute, says the challenges for successful implementation of the agreement are many. They include whether President Kiir chooses to make decisions democratically or unilaterally, and whether timelines in the peace agreement are met. Akol says full implementation of the deal is going to require active participation of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, and other partners. He notes the relations between the two warring parties and UN peacekeepers are not good at the moment and will have to be repaired in order to foster a good working environment.
For the duration that armies have been here prior to the conflict, there was hardly any confrontation. If it was, it was minimal compared to now. But since the onset of the crisis, there have been clashes. Ambits have been viewed at times by the government and also by the armed opposition as being partisan.
But Akol says government and armed opposition forces must put those feelings aside if the peace deal and all of its terms and conditions are going to be implemented. He says armies will play an important role in the peace process by helping to set up institutions that will play a key role in ensuring the peace agreement signed in August is fully implemented. Among those institutions is the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Committee, or JEMEC.
The new mandate of ANMIS asks it to assist in the formation of all the transitional institutions, and these include JEMEC itself. I have mentioned the National Constitutional Amendment Commission, and the Hybrid Court, the Commission for Truth, Healing, Reconciliation and Healing.
Akol says some of those institutions will be created by acts of parliament while others will be set up by the African Union. Another panelist, Lona James Elia, executive director of a local NGO called Voice for Change, believes the UN Security Council, which has threatened to impose targeted sanctions on individuals accused of blocking peace in South Sudan, has not always acted in the best interest of the country.
Having ANMIS as part of the UN Security Council, all, of course, the resolutions that comes from there, therefore, is not consultative. It becomes a one-sided because this is how the UN Security Council operates, and nobody questions and nobody asks.
Elias says ANMIS plays a vital role in South Sudan, but in addition to its recently extended mandate, she says the mission should also help in another area.
The issue of democracy and rule of law that has failed to be instituted right from the signing of the peace agreement up to date is one of the contributors to this current, the 2013 conflict.
The UN Security Council renewed ANMIS mandate earlier this month. The new mandate calls for the mission to monitor the peace agreement and ceasefire that took effect in August, build capacity in transitional government institutions, protect civilians, investigate human rights abuses, and assist with aid delivery. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
Philip Tonaleu prepared that report from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the church in Western Bahr al-Ghazal teaches soldiers how to forgive. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can you do if your friend is not happy?
To console her or him. You try to advise her. If she tells you her problem, you console him or her.
What I would do if my friend is not happy, I would encourage my friend. I would stay closer to my friend. I would make sure that I do most of the things for my friend, that I may build his life into a better future or into a hope.
I would ask my friend what is wrong with him or her and then find out the solution for the problem.
If my friend is not happy, I'll try to make them happy in the best way possible.
Well, I would talk to them because talking to them would be the best option to know what is wrong so that I would try to solve the problem.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Members of security forces in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state say they are ready to welcome members of the armed opposition back into their ranks. At a three-day workshop in Wau, members of the military, police, prison officials and wildlife forces discussed how the warring parties in South Sudan's 22-month conflict should learn to forgive each other so that they can form a transitional government of national unity. Dimo Silva Aurelio was at the workshop and files this report for VOA from Wau.
Brigadier General Jackson Ulak Malao told participants at the workshop, which was organized by the Justice and Peace Commission of the Catholic Diocese of Wau, that conflict is never permanent. He says now that the warring sides have signed a peace deal, the armed forces on both sides of the conflict need to forgive each other and start focusing on rebuilding their country. Ulak says there will doubtless be some disagreements during the reconciliation process, but South Sudanese need to learn to come together and resolve their issues peacefully. He says forgiveness leads to peace, and that is the message that commanders should be passing on to their forces. Prison officer Yak Paul says she would find it difficult to forgive members of the armed oppositions and worked with them. Paul says the conflict in South Sudan has cost many lives, including her own father's. He says other people have been separated from their families, and for them and those whose loved ones have been killed, forgiveness is difficult. She says she would need to confront someone who is suspected of killing her father before she is able to work with that person. Police officer Joseph John says he has already forgiven the rebels and will welcome them warmly. He says he wants the opposition to participate in the reconstruction of the country. He says that when people live in peace in South Sudan, the country will know stability and will be able to develop. But if fighters remain in the bush, he says reconciliation and peace will be difficult. Natalena Mambo is the coordinator of the Justice and Peace Commission in the Catholic Diocese of Wau. She says the army is central to implementing the peace agreement, and that means SPLA members have to find it in their hearts to forgive their former foes and work together.
As you know, in our South Sudan now, we have signed a peace compromise peace. And in the next months, we are going to receive our brother who were in the opposition, and they are from the organized forces. They are going to come. So we want to prepare these organizing forces to welcome them. And this is why we are conducting the peace, the conflict, so that we talk about the conflicts that happened. And now after the conflict, when we need peace, we have to forgive each other and make the reconciliation so that we reach the really peace.
The workshop covered issues of conflict management, conflict and personality, reconciliation and forgiveness. The 50 officers from different security forces who took part were told they should not expect to be compensated for any losses they sustained during the conflict. The workshop organizers say they plan to hold similar workshops in other parts of the country to encourage the armed forces to learn to coexist with their former enemies. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Researchers at the University of Southern California and Addis Ababa University, along with their partners, are studying the relationship between air pollution and health in East Africa. One researcher says the study is the first of its kind for the region, and the findings could save thousands of lives. Ayen Bior reports.
The World Health Organization says 3.8 million people die every year from air pollution-related diseases like stroke, heart disease, and lung cancer. As Africa becomes more developed and subsequently more dependent on things that emit pollution, like cars, trucks, and agricultural pesticides, WHO officials fear air pollution could become one of Africa's most dangerous killers. USC professor Kiras Burhani says for the first time, scientists will record air pollution data in East Africa for 5 years in neighboring Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda on a continuous basis.
Which will give local policymakers tangible data, local data, so that they can act on environmental health policies and they can try, for instance, to lower exposure to indoor air pollution sources.
And one of the biggest sources of indoor air pollution in East Africa is cooking stoves, which burn biomass fuels such as charcoal, crop residue, and animal dung. Burhani says studies on pollution have taken a backseat to more pressing matters like famine, drought, and political instability.
So even though people have realized, qualitatively at least, that air pollution, especially indoor air pollution from cooking and heating, is a big problem, I think to me it sounds like it's a matter of priority.
Burhani says obtaining hard evidence of air pollution that is tailor-made for local communities can influence decision-making in individual households and could even one day impact national policy.
I'll give you one example. Right now, almost 90-95% of people, for instance, in Ethiopia, use biomass fuel for cooking. But it's possible that they could switch to improved cookstoves or even cleaner cookstoves that use biogas that will tremendously lower the level of air pollution. So things like this are feasible, and you know, governments, once they have local data, high-quality data, they will be able to plan accordingly.
The World Health Organization says safe and efficient cooking stove would reduce the workload for women and children and could decrease the demand on scarce natural resources like wood and charcoal. During the first year of this five-year study, USC, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the South Coast Air Quality Management District will train researchers in East Africa to set up air monitoring stations. They'll also be trained on how to collect data. The second year of the study, researchers from Addis Ababa University will measure the impact of air pollution on the respiratory health of 9 and 10-year-olds in East Africa. Eventually, Burhani says, the study will be expanded to other East African countries.
At this point, it basically comes down to a matter of logistics and feasibility and existing connections. But we have plans to include countries like South Sudan in the future.
Results of the study are expected to be released sometime in 2020. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Tanzania goes to the polls Sunday to vote in a presidential and parliamentary elections. Jill Craig reports from Dar es Salaam on the key issues and the mood ahead of the vote.
Here in Dar es Salaam, election season is in full swing. Posters cover walls and billboards, flags fly the colors of the two main parties, and many people are dressed in distinct colors. Green and yellow for ruling party CCM, red, white, and blue for Chadema, the opposition. Otieno Ogogo is dressed in green and yellow. He says he will be voting for CCM's presidential candidate, former Minister of Works John Magufuli, because CCM has done a good job in recent years.
Look at the peace around us. In many countries, not like that during election period. You would have seen people walking around freely, doing shopping freely. And at the same time, not only that, look at the development in our city of Dar es Salaam.
But Chadema's supporter and retired banker, Analia Bondi, disagrees. She says she is particularly frustrated by the educational system and will be voting for former Prime Minister Edward Lowassa, Chadema's presidential candidate, because she thinks he will make improvements.
Well, I think we need a change. I think the ruling party has been in power for so long and is moving very slowly in terms of development. So I think Chadema is the party to bring change.
The perception of CCM as moving slowly has been a challenge during the campaign, says CCM National Executive Committee member January Makamba. But he argues that Tanzania has seen much progress in the past 10 years.
Some of the young people who complain the most about our party are the ones who have done the best in their lives over the past 10 years. You know, once you are in power for such a long time, sometimes people come to a point where they seek change just for the sake of it. But what we have done is we have picked a candidate who counterbalances that notion of a tired, old, corrupt party.
Moisiga Baregu, a member of Chadema's Central Committee, says that CCM already had its chance.
What they are saying and what the candidate is saying is that give us another chance, we'll try better next time, and I'm sure. And what we are saying is that 50 years plus is a long time, and that probably Tanzanians deserve better.
Benson Bana is a co-chairman of CMONT, the Coalition on Election Monitoring and Observation in Tanzania. He says his organization has deployed 350 observers in all parts of the country who are watching to see if the electoral process is credible, free, and fair. So far, so good, he says.
The election management bodies, it seems this time they are well positioned to deliver an election that's going to be credible to the Tanzanian people.
Unlike his counterparts in Burundi and other African countries, President Jakaya Kikwete chose not to seek a third term this year. That may have lowered tension and set the stage for what looks like will be a peaceful vote. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. At least 30 people are dead after a cattle raid in a remote village of Jungle State's Bor County yesterday. Local officials suspect Murley youths carried out the attack. Government forces are still trying to track down the criminals. It's the deadliest cattle raid in Jungle State since South Sudan's conflict broke out in late 2013. The Bor County commissioner says hundreds of suspected Murley youths, armed with machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades, attacked the cattle camp in Jale Payam on Thursday morning. He says two women are among the dead, and he says 12 soldiers are dead from the ambush that they pursued the suspected raiders after the attack. Area member for parliament, Kwal Bwal Ayam, says the attackers are believed to have come from Pibor. He says the raiders stole some 1,600 head of cattle from one camp alone. Analysts at a public lecture in Juba yesterday said the strained relations between the UN and the government of South Sudan will further complicate matters during the implementation of the IGAD-brokered peace deal. They also say the warring parties are primarily responsible for ensuring that lasting peace is restored in South Sudan. Zakaria Ding Akol, a senior policy analyst with the Juba-based think tank the Sud Institute, says the challenges for successful implementation of the deal are many. They include whether President Kiir chooses to make decisions democratically or unilaterally, and whether timelines in the peace agreement are met. Akol says full implementation of the deal is going to require active participation of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, and other partners. He notes that relations between the two warring parties and UN peacekeepers are not good at the moment and must be improved to foster a good working environment. And finally, United Nations agencies in South Sudan today commemorated the UN's 70th anniversary. The commemoration underscores the role of the UN agencies in delivering aid services to thousands of people across the country in the face of insecurity and adversity. Most of the hundreds who gathered at the UN compound in Juba today were people who work with UN agencies, but a few government officials also turned up. The commemoration included entertainment from an Acholi group of traditional dancers and a performance by Rwandan peacekeepers. Margaret Loy, head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says UN workers have airdropped 100,000 metric tons of food since January 2014 and provide clean drinking water to hundreds of thousands of people and continue to protect civilians affected by the conflict. She says the government and the armed opposition should step up their efforts to implement the peace deal signed in August by the leaders of both warring parties. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol, and that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Marina by Sam Mapangala.
Nikiwa nikitembea ama
We have been listening to Sam Mapangala with the song Marina. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.